They're in the middle, right?
That's in the middle, the balls and the ass, known as the gooch in Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
And in Spanish, it's called a ñe.
A ñe?
Because it's neither that or that. Ñe.
Ñe. I like that. I was talking about chodes, which is the same thing. And an Australian came up to me afterwards and was like, mate, I don't understand at all what you were talking about. I was like, you know, it's the spot between your balls and your asshole. He was like, that's the gooch. And I'm like, the gooch? That's the beautiful thing about the English language is a chode can mean so many things to so many people.
What is Dr. Phil calls it?
Whatever Dr. Phil calls it is what we go with. Plain and simple.
Well,
I call it a taint, plain and simple. I don't know why my Dr. Phil is just Argus with a slight stutter. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Comedy Store Podcast. I am your host, Rick Ingram. I'm back. It's Labor Day weekend. And I'm not sure when you're going to be hearing this, but I hope you had a good Labor Day weekend. And with me tonight, good friend, funny comedian, Mr. Francisco Ramos.
Yeah.
Did I say that with the proper inflection? How would you pronounce your name?
You want me to pronounce it like Spanish accent?
Traditionally, like? Yeah.
Francisco Ramos.
My God, so much sexier.
But I would never say that. That'd be even in Spanish standards, that's ridiculous
to
say that.
Okay. Like, so
that the only way to say that, I mean, it was like if I was having sex with a girl, like,
sure.
And I'm like, it's like, tell me your name, Francisco Ramos.
Fuck.
I
think if I was having sex with a girl and she asked me to say my name, I would say that too.
Just say
Francisco Ramos.
It's like, no, your name, Rick Ingram.
Trust me, it's not going to be the same if I say my name. Francisco, I've known you for a while now. I don't know how many years you've been here, 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, maybe longer something than like that. Yeah.
When did you first show up at the Comedy Store? When did you show up in L.A.?
I showed up in L.A. in 2006.
And you came from where?
I came from Maryland. I grew up there. For people that know, I was born in Venezuela, but me and my family moved to Maryland when I was 12. Went to school there, grew up there.
What brought you to Maryland? What brought the family to Maryland?
My mom, she worked at the Pan American Health Organization. Then she got transferred. And it was only going to be like a two-year contract then, but it was like AT&T. We just kept renewing.
Just kept going.
Damn.
Were you mad when you were a 12-year-old having to move to a new country?
You know what? I wasn't happy. It wasn't like it was because it was at that point where it was in sixth grade, and it was the point where I started going out to little parties with girls. And like it was that whole thing of like, I had my friends, and they're like, oh, we got to go. So then obviously it's not like you're just moving from Maryland to Virginia. It's like, no, I'm moving to another country without even
culture.
Know the language. Yeah,
you didn't speak English.
Not at all.
So did you have to do like English as a second language thing, or did they just throw you to the wolves?
No, they threw that. My mom, because being Catholic woman, you know, she put me in this little private Catholic school, which only had like basically one grade per year.
Right.
So there was no ESL class,
no special class. No,
so they just put me in the back, and okay. I learned English by myself.
I mean, they say that's like the quickest way to learn a language is just to be
quickest,
forced
but
to do
suffering
it. But it has to just be hell.
I mean, it was like, because I remember just the whole, like the rest of the year, like I was just there. Like I was just like a monkey. It's like Planet of the Apes, kind of like.
Right.
I was like, oh, now I can learn this and now I can learn that. And then there was one time where I was doing a homework, and I did this whole workbook. It was like until 4 a.m. My parents were like, why did they give you so much homework? And it turns out that I only needed to do one page.
But you the whole thing.
I did the whole thing. I understood that I had to do the whole
Damn.
Book.
Man, I mean, I guess that worked out for the rest of the the semester. You were already done.
I was done, basically, but yeah.
Wow, so all right. In what grade at 12? You're, what, a sixth grader?
Sixth grader, yeah.
Man.
So, but it was... But it's funny because after then we started seventh grade and I understood English and
right.
I could talk too. And so I was like, so it basically took me like 6 months to learn English.
And I'm sure you can actually hear it over the podcast airwaves, but did you have the Ricky Martin great looks when you were a 12-year-old?
No, I was very like, my dad, like I used to wear, like I was blind. Like I used to, I had the LASIK surgery done.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but I was like, I had like negative 9 and 10.
Damn.
So it's basically like,
yeah,
completely
almost
blind.
Legally blind.
Like,
yeah.
Blind, yeah. So I used to wear, these glasses, like my dad, like huge nerdy glasses that my dad would wear. So, and I was wearing the same model.
Awesome.
And then so I was wearing all this thing and I was like, you know, I had the typical like,
comb over swoop going.
Yeah. So I was like, I was nerdy looking, you know. I looked nerdy looking.
I feel like this is probably what, the mid 90s or something, early 90s. How old are you?
I'm 33.
33. So all right.
So I was 90 when we moved. It was 94.
All right. So it's like it sounds to me like your classic 90s movie where they try and make the hot girl look like a nerd by just throwing like really nerdy glasses
on her. Somebody like it was, I was walking in the hallway, somebody just removed my glasses. And that's when the music started playing.
Yeah, and they were like, oh, he's popular now.
Wow.
Francisco's the coolest guy in school.
Woo! And then I started, and then the friends that I used to have, I was just stuffing them in their lockers. Because they weren't, that's the whole plot of the movie, right?
The old American story. Hey, classic.
I was Screech, but now I'm AC Slater.
Damn. That's the ultimate dream, I think, for most people, to make that move.
To become AC Slater?
Yeah. Now, do you still have friends and stuff back in Venezuela?
Yeah. I mean, I still have friends that I grew up, that I, you know, that I went in kindergarten with, you know, like that I still talk to them. So yeah, I still have friends over there, and then friends from DC, friends from school, friends from college. So yeah.
Do you have friends and family back in Venezuela that are jealous that you got to come to America, or are they happy? Or it's kind of like, fuck you, go to America.
I mean, they have, if they are, they never told me. Anything. I don't know, yeah. But like, I don't know, because I mean, we just went, and it happened right at the time where like the Venezuelan government was going into the wrong direction with Hugo Chavez and stuff like that.
Right, heading towards that socialism.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Let's take everything away from everybody.
Yeah, so it kind of like, it was basically like a lot of people were moving after that too. So it wasn't like, we just moved before it happened kind of thing.
Got out just in time.
Just in time.
Well, that's pretty cool. And so you went to Maryland, and obviously, I mean, you got to be somewhat happy with the move now. You're a comedian. I can't imagine the comedy scene in Venezuela.
I mean, right now it's actually like it's actually popular over there. Like,
really?
We got like stand up. Like, because before, you know, like Venezuelan comedy, or and I think most Latino comedy, like it wasn't about doing stand up. It was more about doing impressions. And a lot of it is talking about the government and all this stuff,
right?
Because that's what people live through every day.
Yeah, but I find most foreign comedy in general is. Political satire.
Yes.
It's a lot of making fun of the decisions the governments are making.
Yes.
My wife's Israeli, and a lot of the Israeli themed comedy shows is all about, it's just them doing impressions of people in parliament.
Yeah,
and
that's
the leaders.
That's what it is. Even to this day, which right now stand up in Venezuela is actually now what it is. It's actually stand up. But obviously people still talk about, because it's so like, it's everyday conversation that you have to talk about it, you know? Like,
right.
But I've done stand up in Spanish, and I've done there, and I actually worked out. I've done the same material that I have here, and I basically translated it, and it worked.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Just to think about doing that.
Yeah.
So, and so you've done comedy down there, you said?
Yeah, I have. I've done a few shows when I go visit family and stuff like that, but just to see how it works out. And like, it's like, it's funny because, yeah, I'm completely bilingual, but doing comedy is like stand-up, you know, like it's about repetition and getting the timing and everything.
Right.
And like,
cadence is different in Spanish.
Yeah, so it's like, there's some things that are like, you can't, like, you got to practice. So like,
right.
It works, but it's definitely a thing that I'm like, you could, it's like starting over kind of way.
Right. All right. And so you're in Maryland, and then were you a Terrapin?
I was a Terrapin. I was there when we won the national championship for basketball with Juan Dixon.
Nice.
Steve Blake.
God, Juan Dixon just creamed his jeans at the way you said his name.
He was, I don't know what happened to him. He was I think after he went to like 1 year in NBA, and then he just got fucked up.
Yeah, I think
who would have thought that Steve Blake would have had the career that
I know.
He's
one of those guys though where he doesn't complain about the fact that sometimes they just stick him on the bench and let him sit there for four games.
Look, I think it's like being in the NBA, just being on the bench. I mean, you made it. right?
Yeah, you're getting paid good money. Some of the guys get league minimum. Steve Blake's making $4 or $5 million a year, so he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And what'd you major in? What was your
major in finance and international business. Double major.
Damn, look at this. No, this baller over here.
Double major.
What was the goal of being so ambitious with that? Did you know you wanted to be a comedian?
No, I never. My whole life, like I said, I was very introverted too, like, you know, and like everything I wanted to be always kind of like be in the cool scene. So everything that I did was like kind of like following the steps of what the cool thing was or what everybody was doing. And basically that was like my whole life. And when I got to college, you know, like, and also my parents, like since I was little, like my, you know, I was like, oh, you're going to study business.
Smart.
They kind of like ingrained me. So I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'm going to study.
I kind of wish my parents would have done that because mine are just like, follow your dreams and do what you want. And I was like, I'm going to film school. And it literally was the biggest waste
of time.
That's
funny. I have a joke that I do now about how like, yeah, like white parents, they're so supportive of their kid's dream, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a unicorn. Like, are you going to have the biggest horn ever? It's like my parents are like, no, you're fucking, there's no
business.
There's no dream.
Yeah.
You're crazy. So I was like, so I studied that. I started doing finance and international business because that was the thing to do. And then, last semester, where I was going to take the class, I wanted to focus on finance, which was security analysis, which is like when you evaluate companies.
Okay.
I was like, oh, that's what I wanted to do. I took the class and that was like the first eye opener that I had because it was such a disappointment of how I hated.
Right.
And like,
this is what I want to do. I don't think this is what I want to do. No,
I kind of cheated my way through the whole thing, like too much, you know, and then that's when I started like the ball started rolling. Like, this is not right. Like,
right.
I want to be passionate about something.
Right.
And, but then I got into, right away, my sister was working at an investment firm and I got an internship and I started working right there right away after college. And then they gave me a job right there. And then I was like, same thing. You start thinking, tricking yourself like, oh yeah, well, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to make some good money.
Yeah,
and
you know, that's the thing that, you know, like,
I'll go
it's
on
the whole
vacation 2 weeks a year.
And, well, and then I get the MBA and then I get married and then I have kids and I get divorced, you know, like the whole, like kind of like
following the path. Of
yes.
The common man.
And I realized I had like a quarter life crisis because I was like, I started going, I'm like, look, if I do this, like I knew what my life was going to be. If I kept doing what I do, I knew I was going to marry the girlfriend that I had. That's when I first started going, like thinking, I'm like, okay, what do I really like to do?
Right.
And, throughout my whole life, I always love making people laugh, love making fun of people.
Sure.
I mean, love watching comedies and stuff like that. And during that time, like, Whose Line Is It Anyways was popular, the show.
Right.
Drew Carey.
I was going to say the American Drew Carey version.
Yeah, 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 the Drew Carey version. And I used to watch that all, and I used to, like, love watching it. And so I remember going online, and I looked for an improv class to take.
Sure.
And so I went to the DC Improv, and I took one class. And I didn't tell anybody. It was like I just went by myself on a Sunday.
Smart.
Yeah, and I took it and it was the first time I felt oh man, I'm good at this. I like it and I want to do it again.
Right.
That's another thing too. Like I always did a lot of stuff that I got bored quickly, you know, like with sports, for example, like I can play a lot of sports, but I'm not good at one because I never stuck to one.
Right.
Kind of thing.
You dabble in everything. Yeah. You're like, you know, I'm just,
this is
of-
not good. I'm just done. Yeah. So, but then I took the an improv class. You did a show at the end of the class in front of friends. And the first time I did a show, and it was with friends that I invited. And I was like, first time I got on stage, I felt good. Like it felt like, okay, I like this.
Yeah. It's a good feeling.
And then after that, you start taking all classes and everything in my life kind of changed. Then I was like, I used to go out all the time. I used to promote, you know, and I had a club and, you know, I stopped doing that. Like Fridays nights, I was interning in this comedy sports in Arlington, Virginia. I was like a.
We have comedy sports in Kansas City too.
Yeah, where it's
one team versus the other.
Yes.
And yeah.
So I interned in one of those, and I remember
hilarious.
Just trying to get. So I did that for like a year, year and a half. And then that's when I started, going like, well, if I really want to do this, I got to move.
Right.
Because I have to go where the...
You have to go where it's reasonable to,
yes,
to follow it as a career.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. The bug you get the first time you really perform for people and you're making people laugh and you're like, oh, this is awesome.
How did you go?
I'd always loved comedy. My parents are real funny people. Mm-hmm. My dream growing up, I always wanted to be on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So I was real big into, to all the SNL people. And, I remember watching like Eddie Murphy Raw and Delirious with my dad and my brother and thinking it was funny, but you know, I was a kid and I didn't understand half what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And then the first time I remember watching a comedy special and just loving it was Chris Rock's Bring the Pain.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I remember watching just being like, and I knew who he was from Saturday Night Live where he did Nat X and a bunch of other funny characters, but just watching him do like an hour, I was like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then I always kind of, you know, talked about it like, you know, the high school talent show type thing.
Oh, so you would do all that stuff.
I didn't do it. I just always was like, I'm going to do this. I would do like skits with my friends, Eli and Mark and Cheese and those guys. Some of them, you know, we'd do skits in front of the high school or whatever it was. We'd get great laughs. So I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it. And it was I still kind of focused solely on doing SNL type stuff.
Yeah.
And then, summer before my senior year of high school, I was vice president of the student council because I was a nerd.
Wow!
And
vice president, you didn't never make it. You were like Biden.
Yeah. Well, I ran with the way they did it at high school is you run like president in the United States. Is you run with someone to be president,
so
vice president.
There. Okay.
And
so the other guy had to die in order for you to become president.
Yeah, I ran with a girl who actually she became my girlfriend.
Oh wow!
And it lasted for a good
scandal
4 months, and then I broke up with her because there's too much pressure.
Too much politics.
Yeah, and then so we won at the end of our junior year. And then we broke up.
What
mid-summer.
Was your slogan? You had a slogan?
God, I don't think so. I remember hanging up, like pro wrestling was real popular late 90s. I graduated in 99. So Stone Cold was real big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember.
I had a bunch of signs hung up all over the school that said Rick 316. And I remember the principal pulling me aside and being like, I need to talk to you about these. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm mocking religion or whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, it's been brought to my attention that this is the international time of getting high. I was like, no, that's 420. He's like, oh, well, what's this? I'm like, I'm mocking a Bible verse. And he's like, we should probably take those down anyway. So that was the only one I can remember. So I don't know what I ended up being able to use, but I'm pretty sure that the girl I ran with, Jana, I think she just wanted to use me for my ability to give a speech in front of school.
Because you were good at that.
Yeah. So like the people we ran against went up and they gave some speech about how qualified they were and you know, all that.
Well, I was on prom committee this year and I'm going to make sure that everything is great.
We're going to get free cheese pizza and Fridays.
Exactly. Like, they had this whole shtick planned out with how great they were. And I just went out there and I was like, yeah, this is for all the people who don't care about qualifications. I was just like a total degenerate
asshole. So it was like a stand-up set there.
I was wearing like a green leisure suit.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And so we won. And part of the deal then was we got sent to the student council exec board, got sent to leadership camp with a bunch of people from all over the world, mostly United States, but there was a bunch of random weirdos from some girl from Belgium that was real cute, I remember, and a couple guys from a guy from Estonia. And so they sent us to Lake Tahoe for a week to learn leadership skills.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of these people ended up being, you know, state senators and shit.
Yeah.
And I remember getting there and being like, oh my God, Lake Tahoe is beautiful. And then they told us, you know, gave us our schedule, and there's no like hanging out outside, enjoying being in Lake Tahoe. And I was just like, this fucking blows.
Yeah.
So me and a couple other people would sneak out. We'd get up at like 5 a.m. before the counselors woke up and we would just hike out.
Oh, cool.
And we were in Nevada, probably about 4 or 5 miles from the California state line at South Lake Tahoe. And so like one of the days was like, let's just walk to California.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And then we got in trouble, obviously, because we missed out on like the which color describes your personality type 4-hour lecture course. And part of their punishment was that they wouldn't call our school if we participated in their talent show.
Okay.
So the first time I ever did stand up was I told them I would do comedy at the talent show at the end of the week. And I went up and I did about 12 minutes talking about how shitty the camp was and what a ridiculous farce it was to make kids do this. Like it meant something.
Yeah.
And I was just crushing because everyone was like, he's just saying terrible shit about this place.
Yeah.
And all the counselors just staring at me like, you evil son of a bitch. And I remember this guy, Ricardo, was one of the counselors. And he pulled
Ricardo, such a dinosaur name.
Yeah. He pulled me aside. He's like, hey, I want to talk to you. I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, I just want to let you know, man, you got a lot of really amazing leadership skills, and we're all just hoping you don't use them for the wrong thing. And I remember being like, note to self, use them for the wrong thing. Definitely don't use these for the betterment of mankind.
He was trying to be like that, like telling like Peter Parker, like trying to like, hey, you know, with great power, exactly, comes great response. You're like, nah, fuck
it. I'm like, fuck responsibility. I'm going to use these webs to fucking stick people to walls. So I did that, and I loved it. And so then I wasn't old enough to obviously get into comedy clubs because I was still 17. And went to college. First semester or the summer after the first semester of college, I did a couple open mics.
And the college was where in?
First, I went to college in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Uh-huh. And then I transferred to KU, University of Kansas. And while I was at KU, my buddy John Sheezer, he came up one day to party. He'd drive from the college he went to in Iowa and come and party with me. And he was like, dude, I went and did stand up last week in Kansas City. And I did great. I got like third place. And I was like, what? You did stand up? And so he signed me. You want me to sign you up? I'm like, fuck yeah. So after that, I started doing it. And then I never stopped. I pretty much did it at least once a week there for 2 years. And then same thing you were saying, where it's just like, why am I doing stand up? Why am I doing this in Kansas?
Yeah.
So I made a decision moving to New York or LA and came into LA and.
Why'd you pick LA? Because I also was deciding between. For me, it was one of the reasons was like, well, one reason was like, because I also love SNL and I like wanted to be. And so like when I was looking at where to go to do this improv, I was looking like, oh, the people who came out from SNL, a lot of came from the Groundlings.
Second City, Groundlings. You know?
So I was like, and I was like, yeah, I want to focus on characters.
Right.
So that's one decision. And another decision was too, because I lived in DC and it's 4 hours from New York. And I was like, I want to live by, like, I want to do this by myself.
Go somewhere else.
Like, where nobody, because I knew if I knew moved to New York, I could have just drive
anytime
every weekend.
Yeah.
So it's like, I was like, no, I want to, like, live by myself, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the middle of the country, so I'm about 2,500 miles from either place. But when I really made the decision, my goal became I was going to move when I was 21. Once I was old enough to get into the clubs.
Yeah.
I was going to move, and my first opportunity to check out one of the places was over Christmas break, my junior year of college.
Yeah.
And I came to LA like the week before Christmas, and it was like 85 and perfect.
This is it, yeah.
And I stayed with my one of my buddies from college. He was from LA, or his parents at least had moved to LA. So I stayed with them down in Redondo.
Yeah.
And went to the beach, and it's just like, this is fucking great. And one of his father's business partners hooked me up with a comic, and he took me to the Comedy Store, and I got to go up in the belly room.
Oh, you did? And, nice. With Jerome Clearly show?
I wish. It was, I don't even
that's
remember.
That's how I started.
Really?
Like, those are the first, I started coming here, and.
All right, so what brought you to the Comedy Store?
So, you know, I started doing, I did Groundlings.
Okay.
I started doing Groundlings and because I wanted to do improv. And then, like, you know, I started doing it and I made, you know, I advanced to the next level and all this stuff. But then I wanted to find like a group of people. I never found that core group of people that were on the same page.
Right.
Like, so.
That was always my problem with improv.
Because I think improv is great when it's like two other people that aren't the, like
everyone
Lonely
gets
Island
yeah.
guys or
right.
Good Neighbors guys, you know, like yeah. those guys, like they're on the same page.
Right.
And there's one guy who's like, I'm not even going to perform. I'm just going to shoot you guys.
Right.
You know, like I never found that. So I was
yeah,
like,
yeah, me neither.
And then also it was getting expensive doing all these classes,
oh, yeah.
you know, because it's like 400
biggest
bucks.
Biggest scam of all time.
Yeah. yeah. And then I realized too, like, this is like everything in life is like they want who they want. So
yeah.
then everybody else is just basically just
you're
throwing
just
away
paying
money.
For them to do what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I was like, well, I'm just going to start doing stand up because
you don't have to
it's
count
free
on anyone else
and you don't have to count on everything else.
Yeah.
So I started doing a lot of open mics and I do open mics. And then obviously one of the open mics was here on the Sundays and Mondays.
Sure.
So I started coming in and doing those open mics. And
this is what year? This was
like late, I think, because
was Tommy the talent coordinator?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Tommy was there. So
this
it was
is like 2008.
2007. Yeah, I think 2007 because I think I moved 2006 and it took me, like a while to get into the, because as soon as I moved here, my girlfriend broke up with me and then it was like, what the fuck am I doing? I shouldn't be, this whole thing. So it took me a while to actually start.
It's important
ramping
to
up.
Have a personal crisis when you first arrive.
It was,
you start at rock bottom. It's a
it
lot
was
easier.
It was like, I never been on a, like never suffered from any depression or anything like that. But I think the first time that it was like a scene from a movie. I remember I was like living in this shitty studio apartment in Westwood. And like, I remember like my girlfriend broke up with me and I was like, just laying on the bed, everything was closed, just dark. Like, and then you could tell like the TV was on, but nothing was like
right.
Like I was like this. I remember
you don't even have the fucking passion to change the channel. You're like, I don't even care.
I was like, this is horrible. But I think yeah. But the best thing that happened to me was because like after that, I was like, well, now I'm just gonna focus 100% on comedy.
Yeah,
and what I came here to do.
Right.
So yeah, I think 2007. That's when I started like coming, like doing like because. Doing open mics like every day because I got a job. I was like, when I moved here, also, I was like, I always love being realistic. And I think that's another thing that I tell comics that or people that want to start, like, just be realistic
right.
with your expectations.
Yeah.
So even when I first moved there, I was like, I'm going to get a job and an investment firm. I got a job in an investment firm because I was like, well, I'm going to. I need to make money. And if it doesn't work out, I can always move back or whatever. At
sure.
least I'm not. And it's funny because like things happen for a reason. I got the best job that I could have in order for me to do comedy because I got this job and it was like the easiest job, like a monkey could do it. So it wasn't that much stuff. And the hours were East Coast hours. So I would start working at 6:30 in the morning, but I was done at 2:30.
Right.
So then.
That's great.
I could just do every open mic. So I started doing open mics after work every time.
Right.
And then one of the open mics that I would start doing was the Comedy Store. And then as soon as I was doing open mics, I started hanging out too.
Yeah.
And I would say like, I went to the Laugh Factory and then to the Improv and then just, the Comedy Store was a place that you can, and that you can still do that. You can hang out and you don't feel like an outsider.
Right.
Like you don't feel like you're like. Disturbing, like,
yeah.
Why are you here?
Yeah, when I used to go to the Improv early in my career, they don't really care anymore. But when they didn't know who I was, they mm-hmm. always did make you feel like,
yeah.
if you're not on the lineup, just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's what I felt the same.
And
thing.
This place is great because
just the fact that you're in the patio and you
yeah.
can just hang there.
There's so many places you can hang out, and no one will ever even know that you're there.
No,
it's not. And like, eventually. It can be sad
yes.
for some people. Like one of my favorite things I witnessed in the OR was Sebastian one night just going off. And he's like one of my favorite comedians.
Oh, he's one of my favorite comedians.
He was doing a set and I don't know who he saw. He was looking out the window and then he just started going on this rant about who are these people?
Why are they here?
Like, they're just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
think a director's going to come and see you drinking on the front patio? And I started dying laughing, just like, God, it's so sad. I hope no one ever thought that guy was
yeah,
me. But
I
started working here soon enough, I guess, I think you did too.
Yeah,
I remember,
well, what happened was like, so I started doing the open mics and here, I don't know if they still do it like how it was, but like you would start doing open mics and then eventually like, if you get like the first, second, like that's people don't know you, whatever. But then if you start getting late on the lineup, like that's when the man, you know, and the manager Dean, and what, like, they start getting to know, like, oh, this guy's kind of funny, you know, we'll put him up later, you know. So I started doing that, and then I started hanging out on the weekends, and especially on Fridays, because there was a show in the Belly Room, was Jerome Cleary's show.
I remember harassing him endlessly about his giant head. But yeah.
And then so then I told him like, hey, I wanna I was like, hey, can I do the music just to be part of the fan?
Okay.
You know, just to get in.
You wanted to run the soundboard for the Belly Room.
For the Belly Room, you know, just to be part of the thing. And then like, and then he's like, yeah, yeah. And then I always remember this thing, because he's like, one time he's like, well, I'm gonna make you one of these Fridays. You're gonna bring up the host. And I remember, like, in my crappy studio apartment, practicing how to bring up the host.
That's awesome.
Like, I was like, all right, guys, you guys ready for a good show? Like, just practicing just to say that. Not even doing any sets.
Gotta get my excitement cheerleading up to par so I can open up
to the
cold, the Jerome Cleary Belly Room show.
So
it was Jerome the host?
I don't remember who was the host.
That's the best.
But I was like, I just always remember
that. You took it seriously.
I was I practiced that like an hour. But to me, that was like a big deal, because the first time I was going to go on stage and kind of like, but you know.
Jay Davis and Josh Nasser used to run a Friday Belly Room show.
I remember watching, because it's funny, because I remember watching Josh Nasser coming in when he was wearing, he had the Hummer and this whole, like, with like this whole Playboy bunnies and just like, just all tan and like,
I'm the man.
And it's funny, because now he makes fun of that, like how he was all like, why did I do that shit?
Yeah, and that was all after PJ wrecked his Jaguar by jumping off the roof through the roof of his car.
He did?
Yeah, there was a PJ who I'll interview him at some point, because he's quite the character. But PJ's a guy that I started open mic with, and
you started doing open mics, and that's how you got hired.
Yeah,
because I was. So how did you like? They just who came to?
Eleanor was a waitress at the time. She was like the head waitress, and she approached me, and Ren is Easy and
they
Ari,
working here,
and a couple other people. They worked here, and they hosted the open mic a lot.
Yeah.
And Ren is Easy kind of put in a word for me. I was an impressionist back then. And everyone was like, you know, Mitzi likes impressionists, and that could help you get in or whatever. So I remember Eleanor coming up to me and being like, I used to sign up for the open mic under the name Dick Ingram. I thought that was clever. She was like, the guys like you and stuff. Are you interested in working here? I was like, yeah. She's like, you get stage time. They pay real shitty, but you know, you can develop as a comic. I'm like, cool. And she's like, is your name really Dick? Is that really what you go by? I'm like, no, I mean, that's what I go by on stage.
That's
she's
my
like,
stage
that's
name.
Stupid.
Yeah.
What do your friends call you? She busted my balls a bunch. And then they gave me a job. Me and Mark Hatchell got hired on the same day.
Yeah.
And, so I started working here, and, that was cool. Back then we had open mic Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, Tuesday too?
Tuesday as well. Wow. And comedy was as dead as can be. Like, even Friday nights, there was no one at the comedy club. But the one show that was always great was the Belly Room on Friday night. And it was a Jay Davis show, and then he handed it over to Josh Nasser. Mm. And it was always packed with, like, young Hollywood socialites or whatever.
Yeah.
And they used to give me you can go up before the host, bring the host up.
Ah, man, cold open.
So that was, that was my, I worked the back door, and I would go up and do 4 minutes or whatever they were up top, and then, all right, you guys ready to start the show? But that was like, that was the one spot a week that I was like proud to do.
I mean,
even though I was going up first, it was like, you know what, it's not eight people at an open mic, it's 30, 40 people packed into a small room, and they were all already drunk and probably on coke and stuff. And then I'd sit down at the back door, and I remember Nasser coming up to me and giving me a clipboard and be like, here's the list. And blah, blah, blah. I'm not doing this. You got to do the list. I'm like, I'm not doing the list. People want to feel like they're on the list. I'm like, cool, get someone else to do it. And then he went and told Dean, and Dean, bro, you got to do the list. I'm like, I'm not doing the list. All right, I'll tell Josh to do the list. So then they would just do the list at the top of the steps. People would come up. Like, yeah, I'm on the list. Like, cool, just go down there. I don't do the list. But yeah, it was definitely interesting.
Yeah, because for me, when I got hired was, so I was doing the open mics and I was hanging out on Fridays doing that, helping Jerome doing that. And then one night I was, I don't know if it was a Friday or a Saturday, and I was watching the show, the OR show in the back.
Okay.
You know how they can let you. So I was watching it.
Sitting in the comic section.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, Tommy, what was it?
Wow.
Well, he comes up to me out of nowhere. He's like, "Well, what's your deal?" And I'm like,
classic Tommy line.
Yeah.
He loves asking.
Which I didn't, my first thought was like, "Oh, fuck, I got in trouble because I'm not supposed to be here." I was like, "I'm just watching the show." He's like, "No, I seen you doing the open mics and, you know, and I seen you hanging on the bar. Hey, yeah, and I seen you, you're funny, man." And then I was like, "Oh, yeah, thanks." It's like, yeah, and then he gave me this typical Tommy line. He's like, "You know, this place, it attracts people, man." Yeah, you know, yeah. It gives you the, you know.
The building's a magnet.
Yes.
For talent and weirdos.
Yes.
Oh, which one am I?
So he gave me that thing, and he's like, "Well, you know," I was like, "you want to work here?" And I was like, and at that point, like I said, I was working.
You had a regular job.
Yeah. And I was like, I heard people getting hired was a big deal because you get, you know, you get to be part of the Comedy Store. And like, and I was like, "Well, yeah, I could work, but I'm like, you know, I have a regular job and I don't know if that's gonna, you know, because you have to stay here real late."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Ah, don't worry about it, man." You know, so then I started, you know, he's like, "I'm gonna talk to Dean." And then I started working, and I remember like the first day, it was like so typical of a comedy store. I get there, like they just give me a shirt. They're like, "All right." And I'm like, "What am I supposed to do?"
Yeah.
Like nobody, I had
no instructions.
It was Jimmy Pitt, the one who basically took me under
great general to have leading you towards the promised land.
He's the one that helps.
Hey, ain't nothing to do. Just stand around. Don't do shit.
Just fucking turn the lights off here. Just turn the lights on here.
You got that?
Yeah. So then I started working, you know, and then.
So who is your who are your coworkers? It's you, Pid.
It was Pid. It was well, I think also like during that time, I think Matt Edgar got hired as well, and Tony Hinchcliffe.
Okay.
And,
Sean Halpin still working
Sean
there.
Sean Halpin was.
He was kind of like the front door guy a lot of the time.
It was BJ. Was also working.
BJ Bales.
BJ Bales.
Yeah, the cover booth guy.
The cover booth. He was working the cover booth, and then Doc obviously, and then Cheezer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you weren't working. Like you were already passed when I started working.
I'd already been fired by Pauly.
Oh, so you got fired by Pauly?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I got fired from working the door while I was on the road with Pauly for not getting a Friday night shift covered, and.
Because Paulie told you to come with
you. Well, and he was supposed to take rent as easy. I might have talked about this before, so if I have, then sucks to be the people listening. But
reminisce.
Yeah, he was supposed to take rent as easy on the road, and then rent as easy booked a commercial, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to film on Friday, and so Paulie called me on like Wednesday and was like, "Dude, we're going to South Carolina, bro." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And so I think I had Thursday, Friday, Saturday shifts.
Yeah.
And I got Thursday and Saturday covered, but no one would cover my Friday because no one wants to work Friday night.
Yeah.
So I was just like, "All right, whatever. I'm going to Pauly. Screw it."
Yeah.
And then Dean talked to Pauly Friday. And I think it was like Saturday. We were at lunch or something. He was like, "Dude, you get your shift covered." I'm like, "Yeah, no one would work for me." He's like, "Dude, that's it. You're not being responsible, bro."
So you told me to come.
Yeah, like I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude, and you can't work anymore. Like, am I getting fired? Did you just fire me from? This is terrible news. And then I only lasted on the road with him another couple months before he fired me from that. So.
So you got fired, and then how long did wait until you get passed?
I was already passed.
Oh, you were already passed.
Yeah, okay. I got passed. I started working here, and I want to say. April or May of 2003.
Okay.
And I got passed in end of September of that same year. So I worked here for like 6 months.
Okay.
And I got really lucky.
Wow.
And Mitzi was in a passing mood. And,
uh-huh.
And
she was still coming in.
She still came in probably once a week. At that point, and she would do showcases once a month, roughly.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And there's like a long list of showcasers. and you still had to showcase for her
to
be an employee. So that's what I was doing. I was just trying to keep my doorman job.
Okay.
And it worked out well. It was a terrifying experience, but
yeah,
she liked it for whatever reason. And then I'm positive that all the comics talked a lot of shit about me behind my back.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of them have been trying for years, and
yeah,
I probably had a solid 2.5 minutes of material, and she was giving me 15-minute spots that I was just fucking eating dicks up there. It was brutal, but it definitely taught me how to be a funny comedian.
Of course.
So.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that's one of the things of the Comedy Store. I would say, like, the Comedy Store taught me, because when I, that's the thing, when I started working here, like, just going up in the potluck.
Right.
That's what same thing, like Danish and O'Neill were doing a lot of the hosting, and they were brutal with everybody.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it kind of like, it's one of the things, like, at the comedy, like, you got to be, like, it's kind of like being on the army, and like, you got to very fucking like they're going to beat you up, and like, you got to stand up and kind of like confront them, because if not, you're just going to get destroyed.
They're just going to tear you apart. Yeah. That's one of the things that I always felt really made this place very fraternity like.
It was fraternity like. I've never
like
been
straight,
in a fraternity, but
neither.
I thought that was.
But I mean, the hazing that goes on, like, they, all those dudes, like I was saying, Ren Azizi, Ari, Skippy Simon, Dave Taylor, those guys just tore my balls apart.
Yeah.
I was doing impressions and shit, and they're like, and a lot of them were just terrible Will Ferrell ripoffs. And they were just like, "You should never do those impressions again." I'm like, "The crowd liked it." Yeah, and they're like, "Yeah, it was terrible. You're awful. You should hate yourself."
Yeah.
Like, what? I talk shit back, and I held my own. And
yeah, you just held your own, and
you get the respect eventually.
You start getting the respect, right. And then they're like, because then when I started noticing is when I was when I did my sets, and then. I would be done, and then they would come up and to bring the other next person, and they'd be like, "Oh, that was good. All right." So, and then they would make fun of it. So I'm like, "Okay, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm cool." They're like, they respect me. They're like, they think I'm funny. So it's like,
yeah. So, well, it was always a wonderful feeling at the Comedy Store when you got the host to be like, "All right, that was pretty good. Yes. This next guy is gonna suck really bad, though." Yes. And you're like, "Yes, I'm not the guy that sucks really bad."
Yeah, there was nothing said. That was great. Yeah,
I was just set up as the good one. Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, to me, it was like what I was at, like, the Comedy Store really helped me become just a person on stage,
right?
Because it's like it didn't really. Because obviously, when I started doing open mics and stuff like that, you start doing all the being robotic. I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna do this," you know,
right.
I'm like. And the and just doing this potlucks where, like, sometimes there was nobody, or like you had to talk. You have to just be yourself. And
yeah, I mean, I remember watching you when you were early in your doorman days, and it was, you were definitely better than your peers, mm-hmm. but it was very, just kind of jokey, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where everyone starts. You're just trying to find out who you are.
Yeah. But
it's vastly, vastly different now. Like, your growth as a comedian is exponential compared to a lot of the guys that I've witnessed over the years where you're like, "Oh, okay." You really figured out kind of what your voice is, your character is.
And also, it's like watching guys like you, watching guys like Sebastian, guys like, that was the whole thing too about working here that, you know. Like,
I agree.
Like when I, because.
You learn who the killers are and how they kill.
And how they, that's a cool thing too. Like, that's why it was the best shifts that I had was like Fridays or Saturdays sitting people in the OR.
Right.
Because, you know, like those were that you would see like the cream of the crop of
tricks,
like,
of the trade,
how they would you know, just how they would talk to people, how they would go. Like, I remember even like watching sometimes like Sebastian, and I don't know if he was talking to Stephen Zizi or Al Madrigal or whatever. They're just talking and they're like, "Oh, you're next." And they just go up and they would do this. And then I'm like, "What the? How can they just walk without like not thinking what they're
going to say? Not planning about their set and stuff."
And they would be the same person that they were just doing. And I'm like, and they'd be like, "Okay, so that's how it is."
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah. So when I first started really kind of developing as a comic was when I was working here, and Sebastian and Caparillo were like the two murderers.
They would just
go up and kill all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember watching it, and Sebastian's like one of the first comics I ever watched.
When you started
like,
working, they're
so
already
funny.
Passed, and they're already killing, and they were like...
Yeah, like, I started working, I want to say, like, 3 months before Cap did Montreal and just really kind of fucking his career just started rolling.
Yeah.
One of the first weekends I worked here, Eddie Griffin was doing main room shows.
He was doing like those.
And Cap opened for him.
Okay.
And just destroyed the room. And I remember watching and just being like, I wasn't the main seater. Jim Painter sat the room, but I was like the assistant seater. But it was cool because then I got to watch the show.
Yeah.
I just remember watching him destroy and being like, oh, fuck, that's a different thing. I got to do this.
Yeah.
And then I watched Sebastian a lot. He was like my favorite. I would watch him every time he went up, even if I was supposed to be working or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just be like, well, if I'm working the lot, no cars are getting moved for 15 minutes. And then I tried my comedy style. Like I was trying so hard to basically be Sebastian. Like all my jokes were in Sebastian cadence, but I'm not Sebastian.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause like I was talking actually today about, Sebastian was, he was the guy I was like, oh man, I kind of like resonated with him because I was like the stuff that he talked about, I was like, oh, that's the kind of comedy that like I want to do. And like, just the way he would, you know, the way this cadence is and everything. I was like, oh, and like, he's funny because he's the first guy that, one of the first, you know, I don't know, the first or second guy, but like that took me on the road, you know, like because he saw me one time at in the main room just doing some show. And then I guess he told Tommy, and then Tommy, Sebastian loved that, and he looks like, you know, so like, but he took me on. So I opened for Sebastian in a couple of shows. And, you know, when I used to go to the DC and he would do the DC improv. And it was great because it was what I was visiting my family,
but at the same time
I was,
that's awesome.
But I was talking like to my, I was saying like, then I stopped kind of like, he stopped taking me on the road, and I'm like, and I'm glad he did in a way, because like I was becoming too much. I was doing the
too
same
Sebastian,
thing to Sebastian.
Yeah.
And then I was like, then, you know, cause obviously somebody that you like, and then you start, you know, subconscious, you start imitating him.
Yeah, I got into a conversation with some lady on Twitter today who was commenting that, I don't know who she was talking about, but she said that last night in the Saturday main room show, some girl went up at one. I went up at like 10:15 or 11:15. She said some girl went up at one and did a bad version of my act. And she's like, I don't understand. What, don't comics watch all the other comic sets so they know what to talk about and what not to talk about? I'm like, No, nobody. Very few comedians I can actually watch.
Yeah,
most of the time
that's
it's
true.
Painful. But if you watch too much comedy, you will eventually
start
it's subconscious. Like subconscious, you said, you're like, okay, that's a style I want. A lot of my jokes when I first started trying to write jokes before I did a lot of crowd work was... It was either in Sebastian kind of formula or Caparillo formula. And
it's funny because those are the two guys that I really also, when I was working, that I would notice how they would, they formula,
just knew, yeah,
like how they would like.
They had their thing down.
Yes.
And it worked so well for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so that works. And then after failing at doing that for a while, it became clear to me that both of those guys are such tremendous characters.
Yes. Their point of view is so...
It's so them.
Like, I even asked one time Sebastian, I was like, well, like when did you find your point of view? It's like, I always had it. I just had to learn how to be funny about it.
Right.
But I always had that point of view of, like, I hate everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I was like, okay, that's why. It was already there, you know.
Yeah, I've heard great stories from people, because Sebastian's only... As long as I've been here, he's only crushed. He's always been a killer.
Yeah.
But... People's stories about early Sebastian are so funny because, like, you know, he was basically still a Sebastian, but it just didn't go over well.
Yeah.
Now, he'd always open with some line and be like, the week I had today. To me, that's like, that's so funny. But just picturing
killer
Sebastian.
But it's funny because it's like when you're trying, like, because he could say that right now and I could picture him, like, and people would laugh right away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the week I had today. And people would just... But, like, I guess at that time you were four.
They said he just came off as, like, this bitter, angry guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I never had, I kind of had, I guess, someone like that where you go on the road and kind of get to see, like, headlining sets with Dice.
But
my first experience was with Pauly, and it was literally just, like, never do any of this. Never be like this at all. And it's not, I mean, it works great for him, but I can't be the fucking, the Weasley guy that's all of his bits are about fucking and cum stains and it wouldn't work. Like, no one would look at me and be like, yeah, I bet that guy, he's experienced a lot of giant cum stains.
That's the thing. It's like, you know what? I think one time, like, it's like you were saying about Thomas Sebastian. It's like, you have to have, like, sometimes some people can, like, for example, some guys can curse a lot and it looks good on them if people can relate, can appreciate
it's
that
natural.
If I start cursing a lot, people are like, all right, take it easy,
calm down, guy.
Like I remember one time Sebastian got off and like some girl like just walking the stairs and she told her friend, it's like, oh, that guy is such an asshole, but I like him.
Yeah.
And to me that was like, oh my god, that's
sold.
What it is.
Yeah.
It's like that's what, you know, like,
yeah,
he can do that. He can be the asshole and be likable.
Ren Azizi has the same thing. I've witnessed a lot of girls being like, that guy's, he seems like a huge asshole. And like, oh, you didn't like him? No, I liked him. Like, oh, okay.
And I realized for me, like, I can't be that. Like, because if I look like, and that's one thing I always, when I started doing comedy, like, you know, because either way I look and people will be like, why is this guy doing comedy and all this shit?
Yeah,
so that's why.
Fuck this good looking guy.
Yeah. So I would be like,
soap opera good looks, fucking stealing our stage time. We get it. You're great looking. Get out of here.
So I would like, that's why my first go to was, okay, I'm going to make fun of myself and I'm going to be like, look,
that's smart.
You know, because I realize like I can't, you know, I can't be that. I don't look like, people are not going to like the asshole guy.
Yeah.
You know, especially.
I'm lucky. I've got the look. People look at me and they're like, man. Young guy, he's not much to look at. He can be an asshole. You better be funny with that fucking face, guy.
Yeah, he'd be an asshole. I like it. All right, let's go.
Yeah, I could tell. I think I'd be pissed off too if I had that guy's face. That's what people just offended that you could. We get it. You're better than us. Quit insulting us, guy. Self deprecation, though.
No, I mean, even to this day, I still do it. And it's like, it's because until people start getting to know you, you know, and now, obviously, now, like, the more now I do it, now I can, you know, not even be an asshole, but I can make fun of people.
Right.
And then, but now it's likable. Now it's like how I make fun of my friends.
Right.
And they still laugh about it.
You know?
You know, but that's the thing that you learn.
It takes time.
It takes time, you know, like, it's funny because with comedy, like, I remember, like, doing just potluck stuff and then, like, every once in a while something would click. And I'd be like, okay, fuck.
That works
that's
well.
That's the first time I got a different laugh that I never heard.
Right.
I'm like, okay. And then you start, year later, something clicks again.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Now I'm, you know, even to this day, there's stuff that clicks for me now. I'm like, oh, okay, now I can do this.
Right.
It's a never-ending experience, you know?
Yeah, always learning. I think we did La Jolla last year together, maybe 2 years ago, something like that. That was my first time seeing you do an extended set.
Yeah.
And I was definitely impressed where it was like, holy shit, this guy is fucking, he's changed.
Yeah.
His whole demeanor.
And it's funny because there's one thing that you told me once and that I still remember to this day. It was like, because I always have like things that people tell me like that it stays forever. And like, I remember like, because, you know, the way that you do crowd work is amazing. And I was, you know, it's just like few people can just do that. And, you know, and it's amazing. And so it's like, remember one time you told me, I was like, I think I asked you like, so how do you like, how do you know when to talk to people, whatever, you know? And I'm like, and you told me like, look, when you talked, if I see somebody that they're not, they could see that they're not being uncomfortable about it, I just move away and then you start talking. And like, and that to me to this day, I use it all the time.
Yeah.
Cause it's not like I do crowd work just to get into jokes.
Yeah. And it makes the experience more, I guess, natural appearing. It makes it seem more authentic and in the moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I use that thing that you told me like to this day of like, I see somebody, I'm like, okay, this guy doesn't want to be talked to, or this girl doesn't want to talk to, I move on and move, talk to somebody else.
And same thing with, you get some guy who's being an asshole or trying to be clever, he's giving you stupid answers, you just move on.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people get stuck on people. And I mean, it took me a while to figure that shit out too, but it's just one of those rules that if you're not going to hit every time when you're just improvising with shit, but if you get to one of those moments where it's just not going, you just move on quickly and people forget about it.
Yeah.
It's not like they're sitting there thinking like, man,
yeah,
He didn't really, he wasn't that funny when he was talking to that guy.
Yeah.
Just happy you moved on.
Most of the people, like, that's the thing. Like, sometimes, like, we know what we're doing, but most of the audience, they don't know what we're doing. So sometimes, even when a joke doesn't hit,
right.
Like, you can, if you just pretend like, oh, it's supposed to not hit,
yeah.
They're like, okay. Yeah. They don't even, because it's
move
like,
on.
Just move on. But a lot of the times, like, you know, like, the thing is like, oh, that joke bomb. Like, yeah, don't say it.
Yeah.
Like, just go up and do it. Like, unless yeah. you're really bombing the whole thing, then you have to talk about
and then
it.
Then admit it, because you might be able to get something out of trying to save the...
It's a fine line, because it's funny, because, like, it's a fine line when stuff doesn't work, but you have to say it, and where you could just, something didn't work, and just... Don't pretend it, you know, and just move on. But like,
yeah,
it's just experience. You know when to use it or not. Yeah, I don't know.
I remember watching Benji Afalo do a set one time, and he was doing crowd work, and he would say something to someone in the crowd, mean, just like, you know, whatever it was. And it wasn't like tragically mean. It was just like, you know, little snide comments. And then after each one, he would apologize. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And he got off stage. I'm like, dude, never apologize.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, never show weakness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you just move on, they'll be okay with
yes.
it.
Yes.
They know you're not picking on someone. I mean, if you really grill into one person, that's kind of shitty anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But as long as you just keep moving on, you don't have to apologize for shit. And if you do, it should be in like a joking manner. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. And then just move on.
Yeah, yeah.
But you
yeah.
definitely don't need to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, because it takes away from the...
Now the crowd's like, oh, fuck this apologetic asshole.
Yeah, like, you're a pussy.
Yeah exactly. Yeah, yeah. That is what it is. It's like, you're a fucking pussy.
I always compare, like, stand-up to me is a lot like trying to get a, like, hit on a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you show any weaknesses, if you show any, like... That you cared so much, like you still have to get the crowd, but at the same time, you still have to be yourself. So if you start showing like
you have to be
everything
authentic.
That you care, like is this okay with you?
Right,
like a girl is like, get fuck the fuck out of here. You're like,
I don't need this
give
coward.
Me a real man.
Yeah,
like this guy, like they, so it's the same thing. It's like you gotta get him, like, and that's the thing. Every time you go do a set, like people don't know you. You have to get them in your. Way of thinking and your way of point of view, you know, you can't just right away think, you know, like, you know, so it's like everything's different. Like you're it's like, and every crowd is like a different girl. You gotta.
Yeah. I noticed my, when I was single back in the day, when I was a young man,
when you were,
I was attracting the ladies by the handful.
Were you just the bachelor party? That's like it. Tom Hanks, man.
I was more like the Barry Diamond of Barry bachelor party.
That's funny. Cause I watched it the other day and I was like, oh, that's
Barry. It's fucking Barry Diamond. But yeah. One thing I always noticed I thought was funny is the few times it didn't happen very often, but the few times that I'd have like a girl come up to me afterwards, and there's some comics that, it's, you know, some of it's looks, I'm sure, but some of it's just the way they present comedy in general. Brian Callens and guys like that, where it's like they just attract girls.
Yeah.
So some of the few times when I had girls come up to me afterwards, they'd come up and after like 5 minutes, you could tell that they were just like, oh, he's actually a lot nicer than I thought. And their interest would just wane. Like, well, he was such a charming asshole on stage, and now he just seems like a nice guy. Fuck
that happens with me too, because they go like, well, but you're not that guy.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's like, because also like, that's another thing too. Like people think like, I can't be on all the time. Like
those people are the worst.
Like those are the worst. Like, can we just have a normal conversation?
Can you just chill the fuck out and be normal for a minute?
Because we're going to be funny naturally, because I think that's the key of like, to me, that's one of the biggest keys to be sort of a real comedian. That's, like, you gotta be funny naturally.
That's one of the big differences to me between comedians and improv actors is, in general, comedians don't feel the need to fucking put it on 100% all the time.
There's
a lot of my actor friends or improv, mainly sketch comedy / improv actor friends that I had. I don't really have them anymore, I guess, but they were always putting their show on, doing their character, and like be at a party or something, and he'd be doing his fucking
singing,
character.
And
like, what are you doing, man? Calm down.
It's like, I was always like I was always, even when I started, I was like all these guys who was, everything was just trying to be like, you just got off stage. Why do you keep doing the same?
Yeah. Let the shtick end.
It's over. Like, because even though you're like we're ourselves on stage, we're still doing a performance.
Right.
So it's like, I always say like I'm the same on stage, but I'm like exponentially times 10 or something. So right. I'm like, it's like, because obviously I can't be my normal self. Like yeah, when I'm watching Netflix on the, you know, like on Sunday morning. Like,
I would watch that set. Just you silently watching Netflix for 15 minutes. The art is what that would be.
By the way, that's on YouTube right now.
Yeah, check that out.
It's got 2 views.
Can't compete with every Nickelback video out there. It has 18 million views. But until you see Francisco watching Netflix, you haven't lived. Yeah, I mean, we're obviously all an exaggeration of ourselves on stage, but.
But still,
the realer you are,
the
funnier it's going to be. That's one of the best things about the Comedy Store to me, is real Comedy Store comedians. There's something really authentic about them, mm-hmm. and a lot of it has to do with how fucking brutal the original room is.
Yeah,
like if you go up there and you start doing your fake shtick, the crowd will eat you alive.
And it's amazing how like it's just the room that I don't know what the fuck happened, because like that same crowd could go to another,
and they'll be a lot happier.
And they're like, they'll laugh, but yeah, they're ruined.
I've watched so many, I don't know, I don't want to say fake comedians, but I've watched so many comedians who don't truly know who they are, I guess.
Yeah, who put an act.
It's an act.
Do a formula or an hour.
And they just go in there and eat dicks. One of my favorite things, I've seen them do well in there, but one of the first times I ever watched Dane Cook at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
He came in and he was fucking huge then. This is like early, I want to say 2005 or 6 or something. And he was still really, really big. And he showed up and he was just acting like a fucking cocky prick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just remember being like, man, that sucks. Everyone was like, oh, fuck, Dane's here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever it was, everyone was mad and accusing him of being a thief or whatever.
Yeah.
And, he went on stage and just was giving it full throttle. And at the time, like he's doing, you know, 2,000 plus seaters all the time.
Yeah.
And just crushing.
Yeah.
And he came in with that same
attitude.
Same attitude, that same like bravado of I'm going to fucking perform for 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And I don't actually have to connect with any of them.
Yeah, I just got to do a performance.
The energy of this many people is going to make it great. And he just went up and ate a dick so bad on stage.
Wow.
And it's just silent. The only laugh in the whole room was Jay Davis sitting in the back of the room. He's going, that's great. Oh, that's great, Dane. And like him trying to overcompensate for the lack of laughter in the room. Dane being like, I don't know what's wrong with you guys, man. There's something wrong with all of you. And just being in the back being like, there is. We want something real. This is what's wrong with us.
No, that is, I mean, that it's that is the main thing that I learned. I became a real person on stage. I mean, that's what, like I said, that's like every true Comedy Store guy or girl, you know, like, I mean, it's just, you see them perform, not even in the Orb or anywhere, and you go like, that's a Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Like troop. It's like being like, to me, it's like going to like being a SEAL.
Yeah,
like being you get so fucked up, like you gotta get beat out of it.
They warp your brain, but you come out on the other side.
And you're like, oh, okay, so now I'm again, you know,
a fucking mutant.
Yeah,
so. It also helps in situations like I was in Lake Tahoe doing shows at the Improv up there.
You went back.
I went back. It's actually, strangely enough, I went and found the building where I did a comedy.
Oh, really?
Because the Improv is right. It's in a casino called Harvey's.
Yeah.
It's literally on state line.
Oh, wow.
So on the California side, there's a bunch of weed shops and shit. And then you cross state line and there's a casino. So you got the best of California and Nevada, South Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
So it was 4 miles from the casino to the place where I first did comedy. So I went up and acted like an asshole and took selfies in front of the building. Like, oh, this is the first place I did comedy. And it's really beautiful up there and it's really fun, but I went in April and they got no snow this year. And so it's basically a ski resort town. And
without snow, there's nothing.
It was no one there.
Yeah.
So a lot of the shows during the week were, I think you do Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
So like Wednesday, Thursday, there's like 20 people in a room big enough for 250 or 300 or something.
Like the main room.
Yeah. And so it's like the first row and a half essentially is filled. And I remember the guy just apologizing, being like, yeah, sorry, you know, it's kind of tough. We didn't, ski season was cut short this year, whatever. Yeah. Just like, whatever, I don't care. you get paid the same.
Yeah.
I went out and the crowd was great.
Yeah.
It was 20 people having fun. They're all on vacation. And I got off. He's like, wow, man, you did really well. I'm like, that's the fucking OR,
yeah,
man.
That's OR.
That's what happens. Yeah, like, yeah. There were years here where 20 people would have been a fucking like blessing.
Amazing. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like, oh, there's three rows of people here tonight.
Yeah.
And it's fucking so great now. The Comedy Store is in full bloom. It's
now it's like, yeah, it's crazy. It's a rebirth. Of,
it is,
of
man.
Like, I mean, because I started working where it was popular, but nothing like how it is right now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is just crazy.
Before Tommy started doing lineups, when Mitzi was still trying to put lineups together, it was bad. The lineups were just bad. There'd be like two or three comics that were funny and then just leftover shit from the 90s that shouldn't have been going up. And it, I mean, and it sounds like a prick saying that, but.
But was it like, because right now, like what's new now about the Comedy Store, like there is a lot of new guys, but that are established,
yeah.
that are, you know, that are coming here. Like, at that time when Mitzi was like, she wasn't getting those same guys
she had her people and she had started, her mind had started to go a little bit at that point and it deteriorated pretty quickly after a while. But, she went with like who she remembered.
Oh, okay.
And so it was, there was a lot of like just comics that just, they honestly had no business performing at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And you know, they might crush at, you know, Johnny's Ha Ha in Wyoming or whatever, but and, they're here. And it was
Missouri. Like,
yeah.
Missouri.
It was brutal. Like I'd sit and watch some of the nights and just be like, I mean, I'm not that yeah. good, but I'm at yeah. least this good.
And also because they were doing, I guess, the same things that were popular back in the early 80s.
It was.
90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where like, because comedy now is like,
it's a different. It's a ball game.
You gotta be real. Yeah, yeah. It's like no, you can't be sticky or anything like that.
No, people don't want to hear if you're gonna do observational stuff. It has to be a character.
Yeah.
Like I mean, you have to be a character. Yeah, you don't need to do a character, but you have to be one.
Yeah.
And it has to really connect because
that's you just have to be
want.
Real. I mean, you just have to be like so. You can't do like you're saying, like if you're doing a character, it's because you are the character.
Right.
You can't. You can't be like, oh, I'm just gonna do the
right. And like the guys who are destroyers right now, like the biggest comics in the game, are just them.
Yeah,
Bill Burr's.
Yeah,
Louis C.K. Yeah, all these guys, they're monsters, and they're not up there doing shtick. They're fucking.
They're just being themselves.
They're keeping it real, and they're telling you their hilarious opinions on things.
Yeah,
the crowd last night in the main room was fucking electric.
Right,
and they were all there to see Bill Burr.
Okay,
and. He brought up Maz. Maz did great. He brought me up.
Yeah.
I had a great set.
Yeah.
And I just got off stage. It was like one of those times where you're just like, fuck, I wish I could have done
more,
2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Where they're like so into you. That
so
you're
into
like,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were just so much fun. And
it's
the
so much fun
I
when you get into
to.
That fan of like of that yeah. group God. Of like, man, they get me. And like,
yeah.
even when I go like, hey, I mean, they laugh. I'm like, what the fuck? That wasn't yeah. even a, like, they just
setups
everything.
Are crushing.
They just get you. It's like,
and I just watched Bill Burr just destroy. And like, just you could tell from the ovation he got
yeah.
that they were there to see him.
Yeah. yeah.
And it just, I got off just like, man, I'm so fucking glad that this is the era that's going on now.
Yeah,
like these
yeah,
are the
yeah.
people coming in and Adam's brought in so many
yeah.
celebrity types, even
yeah.
that Tommy never would have put up mm-hmm. and David Spades and
yeah.
Rob Schneider, even
Tom Papa tonight.
Yeah, Papa.
Know.
It's like,
it's the stuff. Like, I think it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it sounds it, like right now you're seeing him. Like, it's obvious. Like why would you not do that? But like,
yeah. And I mean, I still talk to Tommy enough that, you know, he has issues with a lot of things the Comedy Store is doing
right now,
which I find amusing that he still cares that much, which it's hard to not care, I guess, once you were here as long
well,
as he was.
So
but
yeah.
he,
because he wanted to do the same thing that Tom, that Mitzi was doing.
Yeah. To him, this place just should only be comedy college. And it's great for that. And I never want it to not be that.
And I'm glad, like, it's funny because I'm still glad that I even came before this new wave.
Yeah.
Because I would not have developed.
No,
that,
for sure.
As I did.
It's a different it's
because
a different
now it's
now.
Like, but I think it's like a balance. It's like, yeah, keep it comedy college, but at the same time, you got to play the game and right. know that like
it's not and it's not a headliner show.
Yeah.
So the show isn't hurt by putting David Spade up for 15 minutes or letting him do 20 or something. Yeah. And it's going to bring a crowd in.
Yes.
And
yeah, you see like when you put
you got
like,
15 people on the lineup, there's no reason you can't have
and
some big
and
name
this guy's
in.
Yeah, the big names are going to bring people.
Joe Rogan.
Like when you come and right. you see Joe Rogan is in the thing, everything sells out.
Yeah.
Because they want to see Joe Rogan, but then it makes the whole show better because all these other guys can. We and also, like, as comics, it's like we need sometimes to perform in, like you were saying, in a, such a great crowd. It just gives us that bump of, right. like, okay, that I'm doing good. Like,
this is what, yeah, I'm doing the right thing.
Like, I'm like, cause,
this is why I suffer through sets some
yes,
nights.
Yes, because sometimes we're like, oh, we just do this, especially when, like, when you start, you do so many crappy sets. And then when you get into a front of a crowd, I'm like, oh, I am good.
Yeah.
It's like, it gives you this whole thing of, like, okay, yeah,
I'm making the right decisions.
I'm doing
in life.
The right, yeah, you know.
And so, recently you did Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I made it to the top 10.
Nice.
So, it was a great experience. I mean, it was fun. I mean, it was great doing it. I learned a lot how to perform on TV, you know,
right.
how to perform in the short sets and keeping it tight and all this stuff. Just like,
right.
just, you know, so, it was great. I mean, I think it was like, it was great exposure, you know, people,
yeah.
you know, I'm getting, you know, it's not like, it's not crazy, but I'm getting the most social,
media attention
media activity
yeah.
that I ever had, you know, like, I mean, it's not just my mom now, favorite,
right.
You know, but,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So no, it was great. So I'm really happy. And I think it's to me, it's like, yeah, it's just, again, it's like in this whole game of this industry, it's another step. It's another thing in the resume.
Right.
You know, that's it. You know, like I'm great. Okay. Now, you know, like,
everything that moves you along is a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Takes you to another level.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yeah.
And do you have podcasts or anything, movies, TVs, other things you're working on?
Well, I mean, I got lucky to be, I'm going to, I had two, like a small part in this Maria Bamford's new show and Netflix called, it's going to be called Lady Dynamite.
Okay.
And that's going to be next year. So I'm in a couple of episodes of that. So
that's cool.
That's a great, I mean, it's a lot of,
doing some acting, getting your acting chops out there.
Getting the acting chops there, you know. So so doing that, and then...
Didn't you do voices or something?
That was my first thing I ever did. That was I did a voice for the animated movie Rio.
That's right.
I was the lead, the king monkey, because people always ask me, like, which monkey were you? Well, the only one had lines. I mean, I didn't get hired just to do fucking monkey noises. Oh, yeah, that's me, monkey.
Frank, you are great. Very believable.
Number 47, that was me. Yeah. So I did that. That's the first thing that I ever got. Like, that's the first. I even got that while I was working. I was used to work in Century City, and the audition was in Fox, which is right there.
Right there, yeah.
And like, basically, I told like my, I was like, oh, I gotta go to the doctors.
Smart.
And I went and did the audition and came back, and then like I had to go back again, so I would keep telling them that I had to go to the doctor. Like, this guy's sick as shit.
He's dying on us, man. We can't fire him. He's sick as hell.
Yeah. So yeah, so I got that, and then, you know, and then little parts here and, you know, like stuff, and, you know, but I mean, eventually I want to keep doing, you know, I want to get to a point where I can start a headliner here and there,
right.
You know, hopefully that happens. I'm doing a lot of colleges right now.
Nice.
So that's what I'm doing right now, mostly like road gigs, you know, and you know, just trying to get better here
get
at the comedy store,
here,
you know, coming here to the gym.
Keep growing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's nice. It's finally a gym with an audience, though. So.
Yes, yes. It's finally now. Somebody's like, yeah, can I spot you?
Yeah, people are really enjoying watching you work out, which is, it's a really nice feeling. Let them see your bulge in your workout shorts. Where can they find you on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram?
Twitter at Francisco Ramos, and Instagram and Snapchat, because that's a thing now.
The kids are Snapchatting.
Snapchatting.
I've never Snapchatted. But.
It's amazing. That's when you realize that, like, you start feeling old. Where, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what Snapchat is about. Like,
yeah.
Because, like, I go to these colleges and, like, all they do is just take, like, can I take a picture with you? Snapchat, boom. And I'm going like, well, doesn't that disappear?
Yes.
Like, so it's like, what's the point of the picture? Like, you don't even know who I am.
So worth it for 15 minutes or however long it lasts.
But
it's got to be dying because I recently considered downloading it. And that's like the ultimate sign that something is in decline. It's once I'm like, all right, I'm getting on this. And then people are going to be like, no.
Old man
Ingram's on there?
Let's go. No, I think that's essentially
sticking around.
All right.
I won't scare
Instagram and Snapchat is at F Ramos Comedy. That's not fuck Ramos. That's
at F Ramos.
F Ramos Comedy. Okay. I couldn't. And then you can Google me, Francisco Ramos, Facebook, all that. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Appreciate talking to you.
Yeah.
To me, my favorite episodes of these are the guys that came up through here.
Yeah.
I mean, you can interview a comic. It's like, yeah, tell me your comedy store story. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I got passed 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I perform. And you're like, do you have any personal story?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Okay, well.
Yeah, not even. I mean, to me, the best thing that I always remember, like, that I have before we get out of here is, like, I was working, you know, and I was working the back door. And,
right.
You know, as a back door, you have to put the sign up, the marquee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know why they still don't put, like, make it electronic or something. But I remember it was pouring rain. And I had to go and put, and I was like, it was Doc. And if people, you know who Doc is, he's like 4'5".
Yeah.
And he's the one holding the thing. And I'm like putting the thing, pouring rain. And I'm like, and I remember I had this thought in my head. I'm like, hope this is worth it. Like, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this whole thing comes up. Like, I went to school, I went to college. I'm like, I could die right now.
I'm changing plastic letters on a goddamn marquee. Someone else's name.
Yeah,
I'm not even putting my name.
No, not even mine now. Yeah, it's somebody else. Yeah, so I always remember that. I was like, I hope this is worth it. I remember telling myself, I was like, I hope, but it was.
All right, well, thanks for being on the podcast. And you going on the road or anything?
I am. Well, I'm doing this Cabo Comedy Festival. So, okay. You know, so that'll be great. That'll be fun. You know?
All right.
And so I'm doing, you know, just, yeah, like, I mean.
Look him up online. You can find all of his dates and go and check him out. It's a good show. You'll enjoy it. Well, thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. Comedy Store Podcast, 8433 Sunset. If you're in LA, come check it out. We're right in the heart of the Sunset Strip, and shows are really great right now. So it's a guarantee you're going to enjoy yourself. And thanks for listening, guys.